Okay, year four. This is the final chapter of Stig of the Dump. Chapter nine is called The Standing Stones. For a moment, Barney's brain bounced back to the first time he had fallen down the chalk cliff and met Stig. Then he opened his eyes and saw not the face of the cliff with daylight at the top, but the pattern of beech boughs through which the full moon looked down at him. Then there was a rustle of branches, and he could see Lou clambering down towards him. She fell off the last low bough and ran to where he was lying. "Barney," she was saying, "are you all right, Barney?" He sat up. "Course I'm all right," he said. "Bit scratched, that's all." "Why didn't you stop there if you didn't want to be caught?" "I thought you were hurt. I would have," said Lou, looking around anxiously. Shadowy figures were moving towards them through the wood. One of them, with tousled head, skin skirt, and flint spear, came into the moonlight patch. Lou drew away from it, but Barney knew who it was. "Hello, Stig," he said. "What are you doing here?" Stig's teeth flashed in the moonlight, and then he looked curiously at Lou. "Oh, this is only my sister, Stig," said Barney. "Is this really Stig?" whispered Lou. "Yes, of course," said Barney. "My friend Stig." "Oh," said Lou. "Good evening, Mr. Stig." Stig merely grinned again in a friendly way and said nothing. "Doesn't he speak English?" whispered Lou. "No," replied Barney. "Well, what does he speak then? Latin or French?" "I don't know," said Barney. "You might try him." Lou didn't seem to be able to remember anything suitable to say to a savage spearman in a moonlit wood, so she said nothing. Meanwhile, other figures had appeared from the shadows and were standing round in a circle watching them. Stig made a few strange sounds, and they lowered their weapons. Then an argument broke out with a lot of waving of arms towards the camp and pointing of fingers at Barney and Lou. Finally, Stig smiled at them, held out his two hands to them, and made ushering movements. "I think we're invited to the party," said Barney. They moved off through the wood in a silence that was broken by barking and whining, and there in the dark was Dinah, jumping around on the end of her string. Lou ran up to her. "Poor Dinah," she said. "Did we leave you in the dark then? It's all right, Dinah. It's only Barney's friend Stig and the other nice gentleman." Dinah didn't seem at all too sure about the other nice gentleman and stood there growling in her throat until Stig came up and said something, and she actually licked his hand. "That's funny," Lou whispered. "Dinah seems to know Stig." "Well, why not? Probably meets him when she goes out rabbiting," said Barney. "You know, in the old days, I mean, when things are usual." They were on a forest track now, so narrow they had to go in single file and not talk. But soon they came out from the edge of the wood onto the bare top of the hill, and now the women and bigger children who had not dared go into the wood ran up to stare at them. "I don't suppose they've ever seen anything like us," Lou whispered. Barney took a look at Lou in the bright moonlight. "Well, I don't know," he said. "You can't see yourself, Lou. You don't look much different from them, except your hair's fair." Lou felt her tangled hair and looked at her ripped shorts, then looked at Barney with his legs all smeared with green from the bark of the trees. "You don't look very different yourself," she said. They're walking over the smooth turf towards a cluster of huts. The armed tribesmen were on each side of them, and it was very difficult for them to feel sure whether they were prisoners or guests. As they came near the huts, Lou said, "I thought Stigs were cavemen." "So they are. My friend Stig is, anyway," said Barney. "What they got huts for then?" asked Lou. Barney thought for a moment as he passed the huts. They were not much more than shelters, a few long branches tied together at the tops, thatched with leaves and bracken. "Perhaps they're cavemen on holiday," he said. There was a holiday feeling about the tribe. They were sitting around the fires, from which there came smells of roasting meat. The men were together in groups. The women were looking after the meat on the spits or holding sleeping babies. Barney looked at a group of boys who were rolling and wrestling on the ground and whispered, "Do you think we'll be allowed to play with them?" "Better not," Lou whispered back. "We'll have to say, how do you do, to whoever's giving the party first, anyhow." She tried to comb her hair with her fingers, but Barney, after taking a few leaves and twigs out of his, decided it wasn't worth trying. They passed into the circle of firelight, and the crowd, who had been talking among themselves quite quietly before, fell silent, and everyone was looking at them. They walked in silence around the edge of the circle. Barney heard a very small whisper from Lou. "Remember when we were bridesmaid and page at the wedding?" He did remember, and the feeling was about the same as when they had walked into the church with a bride. But this time they were the most important people in the procession. On the other side of the circle was a group of older men, and in the middle there was a figure sitting on a tree trunk. As they went nearer, they could see that he had white hair, very bright black eyes, and was dressed in some very silky fur with necklaces and bangles of animals' teeth. They didn't need to be told that this was the chief. Barney felt the black eyes boring into him, and then suddenly all of the rest of the party fell flat on the ground. "Lou, what happened?" he whispered very small. "They all fell down." Then he saw that Lou was trying to curtsy, which looked a bit silly with bare legs and torn shorts, and he thought it might be good manners to bow. The chief or king or whoever he was seemed satisfied with his touch-the-toes bend and Lou's contortions, and a smile appeared on his face. In fact, Barney thought he was going to laugh. But then the king looked stern again and barked a sort of question at Stig, who had now stood up again. It obviously meant, "What on earth have you got there?" And Stig began to speak. Barney was amazed. He thought all the time he had spent with Stig, when they'd hardly said a word to each other, though they had understood each other well enough. And here he was making a speech like somebody on the wireless. It sounded wonderful. But he didn't understand a word of it. "What's he saying?" whispered Lou. "He's saying how we came here," said Barney. "Well, how did we?" whispered Lou. "You know," said Barney. "I jolly well don't know," said Lou quite crossly. "That's why I want to know what he's saying." It would be interesting, thought Barney, as the speech went on and on. At one point, Stig would wave his spear towards the North Star. At another, he would thump himself over the heart and slap Barney on the back. "He's saying I'm his friend," said Barney. "A jolly good thing you are," muttered Lou. Barney felt proud. Stig stopped. There was a silence as the chief seemed to think for a while. Then he rose his feet. He spoke in a strong, majestic voice, turning his head first to Lou and Barney, then to one side of the assembled tribe, and then to the other. He raised his arms to the stars, waved his hand at the moon, placed both hands over his heart, and then seemed to be blessing the children and the rest of the tribe. "I think he's friendly too," whispered Barney. The chief had finished, and there was silence again. Everyone seemed to be looking at Barney and Lou, and an awful thought came into Barney's mind. "Lou," he whispered in the silence, "I think it's our turn to make a speech." "Well, go on then," said Lou. "I don't know the language." "I thought you didn't," said Lou unkindly. "Just do it in English then." "Well, I don't know what to say," said Barney, quite sure that whatever happened, he wasn't going to make a speech.
"You do it." "Why should I?" "You're always good at talking. Go on," said Barney.
He could see that Lou wasn't sure whether to be pleased or not at this remark, but it felt as if the silence had gone on for hours. Lou looked around desperately, took a deep breath and started.
"Mr. Chairman, Headmistress, Governors, ladies and gentlemen, golly, that's not right. Lucky you can't understand English. It is with great pleasure that I come here today to present the prizes at your speech day. Remember, girls, that school days are the happiest days of your life. We can't all win prizes, but..."
"Go on, Lou," said Barney. "That's jolly good."
"But I come to bury Caesar, not to praise him, the evil men that do lives after them. It droppeth like the gentle rain from heaven upon the place beneath. Once more in the breach, dear friends, once more. Beware the Jabberwock, my son, the jaws that bite, the claws that scratch. Beware the Jubjub bird and the Shon the Vorpal, Tum-Tum tree. How's it go, Barney? You're doing jolly well, Lou, exclaimed Barney. Poetry. Christmas is coming, said Lou, getting the hang of it and spreading out her arms to the audience. The geese are getting fat, she declaimed, pointing to the moon. Please, she begged, holding out her hand. Put a penny, she paused in the old man's hat. She finished with her hand on her heart. That was super, Lou, said Barney. I wish I'd done it now. Well, you can next time, said Lou, wiping her brow. But it seemed to have worked. The chief smiled at them and waved them to sit down near him. Then he looked at Dinah, standing rather unhappily beside Lou on the end of her string. He motioned Lou to bring this strange tame animal to him, and Lou led the dog up and said, "Shake hands with the nice chief, Dinah." Dinah didn't feel like raising a paw, but the chief gently stroked her back and ears, and then ran his hand over the skin she was wearing and said something in his strange language. "He's saying what a nice coat Dinah's got," said Lou, pleased because she brushed it such a lot. And that's part one of chapter 9.